say too. This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by our friends over at Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending?
National.
Christine Ford and Brett Kavanaugh will get a hearing over the sexual assault allegations on Monday morning. We will be carrying it live as of right now, and you just heard it in the Fox News update at the top of the hour. Christine Ford has not accepted yet the RSVP to attend the hearing on Monday. We don't know if that's just because she hasn't RSVP'd yet but intends to show up, or if she wants to do some maneuvering. Her lawyer, Deborah Katz, who's a Democrat activist, might want to set some ground rules or try to set some ground rules. We'll see what ends up happening. And as that story develops, we'll be bringing to you the details. But if you've ever wanted to know what a Me Too circus would look like, you will get a chance to see that on Monday morning, because that's what this is going to become. None of this will likely change much. If everyone sticks to their stories, nothing is going to change. Democrats will side with Christine Ford because they are going to side with anyone against Brett Kavanaugh. They said that from the beginning. Republicans, they will side with Brett Kavanaugh because there's no evidence to suggest he did anything that he's accused of. However, all eyes are still on Senator Susan Collins. She is the moderate Republican from Maine.
Last week, the Judiciary Committee staff informed me of this letter. I read the letter. At that point, we had no idea who had sent it. And I noticed the date of the letter and wondered why the information had not been released long ago. Mm-hmm. I asked Judge Kavanaugh when I had my final hour-long telephone call with him on Friday about the letter and the allegations that it contained. He emphatically denied that the allegations were true.
So when I hear a statement like that she gave to CNN, it makes it seem like she's leaning still very strongly in the direction of Brett Kavanaugh, but she is saying she's keeping an open mind through all of this.
I don't know enough about Dr. Ford and her allegations yet to reach that kind of judgment. That's why having the opportunity to observe her being questioned, read a transcript or and a deposition, and make that kind of assessment is so important. Obviously, if Judge Kavanaugh has lied about what happened, that would be disqualifying.
So the only thing, if I'm taking her from by her word, the only thing that could change, the only thing that can change her vote from yes to no is if Brett Kavanaugh shows up and says, yeah, I lied. I totally did this. Because you're not going to have any evidence. You're not going to have any evidence of what happened over 30 years ago. That just will not exist. It will not exist. Mike Judge, the other witness to all of this, the alleged witness, he says this did not happen. So you've got two people who say it didn't happen, one person who says it did. You've got 30 years passing. You've got an accuser who doesn't remember a lot of the important details of this event, like where this happened. She doesn't remember the house that it happened, according to the Wall Street Journal. She didn't tell anyone when it happened. In fact, she didn't tell anyone until 2012. And we all know that memories get hazy. We know that for a fact. Memories get hazy. Do I believe this happened to her? Yeah, I do. Do I believe it was Brett Kavanaugh? I don't know. I think it's just as likely that she is confusing Brett Kavanaugh for someone else, or she's convinced herself that it's Brett Kavanaugh. Doesn't mean that Brett Kavanaugh did it. And you look at his history, there's no history to suggest that he would do something like this. Does that mean anything? I don't know. I don't know. People do things for the first time, all the time, right? And it's sometimes out of their character. And maybe they don't do it again. But for this to derail a Supreme Court nominee is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And let's talk a little bit about hazy memory. Because CNN spoke with Senator Dianne Feinstein. She was the one who held on to this letter, having it in July, held on to it until just the last few days. Her memory isn't so good either. And it's kind of weird because she told CNN she couldn't remember when she gave the letter to the FBI. That's kind of weird, right? Because you had it in July, and when you don't remember, you can't give it. Okay, fine. You know what else she can't seem to remember in the, 1.5 months since she got this letter? She has no recollection. She doesn't know. She can't remember if she had any contact with Christine Ford since she got that letter. It's kind of weird, right? You don't have any recollection of that. And yet she will, on Monday, say the memories of the accuser should be taken at face value. Of course she would remember that. She can't remember what she did last week, but she's going to remember someone claiming they can remember all the important details from 30 plus years ago. And again, it's not to say that Ford doesn't believe the story. It is to say, however, we're not going to find someone guilty of rape, of attempted rape, and lose out on a Supreme Court seat without any sort of evidence. It doesn't work that way in court. It shouldn't work that way in front of the Senate. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So Amazon launched an online portal letting you shop at small and medium-sized businesses. It's called Amazon Storefronts. And it's only going to list products if they're made by businesses that would not normally qualify as corporations or big businesses. We're really focusing on a combination of the mom and pop shops and some of the mid-level businesses, mostly because these are the businesses that were directly impacted by Amazon's existence in the first place. I mean, this is about supporting the small business community that Amazon had a role in hurting. Because it's hard to compete with a company like Amazon. It is. That is just a fact. Doesn't mean they did anything wrong, but they're now in a position where they can help some of these companies that they hurt while not hurting themselves. And so I think it's a brilliant move. They don't have to do it, but they're choosing to do it. And right now they've got over 1 million products from about 20,000 businesses being featured on this storefront. Q13 reports. Earlier this year, it released a report that said half of the items purchased on Amazon come from small and medium-sized businesses. So they're putting that out there because they don't want to be perceived as simply this company that is hurting still in 2018 small businesses, even though they're kind of hurting small businesses. And you can think about that from our own habits. I go on Amazon when I suppose I could be going to a shop that's local. I could be going directly to a small business. I go to Amazon because it's cheaper and it's more convenient for me. It provides me all the options I could ever want, and a smaller, medium-sized business, generally speaking, cannot. And so I go to Amazon. And by the way, to me, Amazon's a local business, so I want to support local anyway. Now, at the same time that they're doing this, they're still getting hit with a whole bunch of stupid attacks coming from socialists like Shama Sawant, like Senator Bernie Sanders. Sanders ends up tweeting out this produced video featuring Stacey Mitchell. She's the co-director of the Institute of Local Self-Reliance.
When Jeff Bezos founded Amazon in 1995, he was able to grow this company in ways that would have once drawn antitrust intervention. One of the tactics that he used was to sell goods at a loss in order to capsize smaller competitors that didn't have the same financial backing. In Amazon's first 6 years in business, it lost $3 billion selling books at a loss. The tactic worked. Bookstores closed in droves. The fact that a single company dominates online commerce is a story about the failure of antitrust policy to protect competition. Just how powerful is Amazon? It's now capturing one of every $2 that Americans spend online. To think of Amazon simply as a retailer is to really misjudge the scope of what Jeff Bezos has set out to do.
He's so evil, that Jeff Bezos. If only we could just get rid of Amazon together. Let's just get rid of it. Let's lose the thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs. Just get rid of it. Let's forget about the fact that it completely grew the city of Seattle into what it is today. It completely is responsible not just for the thousands and thousands of direct jobs that they hire, but the indirect jobs as a result of Amazon. Think about the baristas who have a job and the wait staff members who have a job and all of the businesses that are doing third-party work. Specifically with it, they're the worst, Amazon. You know, I don't know how we allow Jeff Bezos to get away with this kind of job creation. How dare he? You know what we should do? I love the Institute of Local Self-Reliance, almost like they care about self-reliance. This is a socialist putting out a video by a group called the Institute of Local Self-Reliance. Nothing about socialism is about self-reliance. Everything about socialism is about utilizing the government, relying on the government to get by. But there are a whole bunch of idiots out there who fall for this, who are falling for these silly, false promises of people like Bernie Sanders. Vote me into office. I will pass bills that will destroy companies like Amazon that are exploiting you. Well, they pay my wage. Yeah, but they're exploiting you. This is my first job, and I couldn't get a job anywhere else, and I'm getting some really good access to information that's going to help me in the future. But they're exploiting you. Actually, it kind of feels like you're exploiting me, Bernie.
I am not exploiting you. Amazon is the worst. It is the worst.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Getting into that time of the year where it gets darker, stays darker a little bit earlier, gets darker a little bit earlier, and that interferes with our station strength. So do yourself a favor, and immediately, if you have not done so already, download the KTTH smartphone app. In fact, you can text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770, and we'll send you a link. You can listen to it on Android, on iPhone. Make sure you get your push notification set up so when there's breaking news or an interesting guest that we want to bring your attention to, you can get one of those alerts. But the good news about the app is you're not going to lose any signal strength, ever. I mean, not ever. I suppose you can be in the middle of nowhere and not get any cell service, but for the most part, any of the signal strength that you are experiencing, my friend in Port Orchard just sent us a text message about it. You can download the app, and you'll be able to hear us in crystal clear audio. And if you've got an HD radio, you can also listen to us. Just send me a text. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. Or if you have any questions about the HD portion, if you've got an HD radio, just shoot me over a text and I'll help you set it up. Text app to 1-800-465-8770. It's already 3 years over schedule, so let's just add another few months to the list of when we get the new tunnel. In Seattle, WashDOT announced the 99 tunnel will not be opening until January of 2019 instead of later next month. And they came out and they're like, well, you know, we originally said 2019 anyway. I mean, we were hoping to get it done early, but, you know, we can't do anything early because we're WashDOT and this has been a nightmare of a project. So, you know, we'll do it in January. Yeah. So that'll happen. Brian Nielsen is the administrator of the Alaskan Way Viaduct Replacement Program.
There's been a lot of optimism over the last year or so that we could achieve that opening date as early as this fall. Stay out of the holiday season. We're going to start the full closure of SR-99 on January 11th.
I like how they're trying to make it. Oh, we're doing you guys a solid. We don't want to do it during the holiday season. We're doing you guys a solid. Okay, cool. Thanks. And before it opens, of course, they're going to be closing the viaduct for 3 weeks, which is going to send about 90,000 drivers onto the surface streets. 90,000 drivers. Think about that this morning for those of you who maybe have to drive into Seattle for work or for meetings and whatnot. Understand that you're going to have, if you're not already going down the viaduct, you're going to have 90,000 extra cars to contend with. And of course, it's going to be made even worse because the mayor of Seattle's stupid plan to close 3rd Avenue to all traffic other than buses and bikes, that's already causing problems. The entire region for 3 weeks is going to be dealing with horrific traffic, although Terry White with King County Metro, he's got a plan.
Metro also is exploring the availability of more than a dozen standby coaches to help keep riders moving. Adding these buses will help maintain posted schedules, and they'll be deployed where needed.
Got it. Cool. Okay, so the person who relies on their car because they're working two jobs just to make ends meet, coming in from Shoreline, going into downtown Seattle for a job, and then having to get to Renton for their second job, yeah, they're definitely going to take that bus because that makes sense. The bus. I love us pushing the bus. The bus works when you don't have that much time, when you have enough time to kill. It does not work when you actually care about where it is you're going. So for me, because I don't drive a car and I rely on a bus sometimes, usually I'll take a car to go or I'll walk, but I take the bus pretty frequently. So today I've got a movie in Northgate. The movie starts at 7. I got to be there about 6:15, 6:30. For me to get there from where I live in South Lake Union, if I were to drive, it would take, assuming no traffic, maybe 10 minutes. Maybe 10 minutes. With traffic, maybe 20 minutes because it's not that bad. Taking the bus, it takes me about 30 to 45 minutes to go the same, because you're stopping constantly. The bus is always late. but we're going to pretend, yeah, the bus will help. Yeah, let's just.
Plus, it's not a direct route.
No, let's take more of the bus. This is just bus. Just all in. Let's just go with the bus. And by the way, on top of that, Heather Marks over at the Seattle Department of Transportation, they're actually going to be making things even worse. Listen to this.
We are also going to engage in some temporary parking restrictions to make sure that we have maximum capacity for all the vehicles to be traveling.
Okay, just real quick. Because now you've got more space in order to drive, but you've got more cars on the road circling, trying to find a parking spot. So you've actually kept more cars on the road. If anything, it would be a wash, right? Except for the person who's trying to find a parking spot, but I forget. SDOT doesn't care about drivers, so really, they'll do whatever. This is not about drivers. This is about emergency vehicles being able to ride around. They don't care about you and your car. They don't care. And they certainly, by the way, don't care if you're someone who lives maybe on the east side, maybe you live south, north, wherever it is, Snohomish, maybe you're coming in from Issaquah to work. They don't care about you. They only care about the Capitol Hill hipster progressive liberals who are woke and ride bikes and take the bus.
Why can't they delay the closure? They love delaying projects so much.
They if anything, they're going to make this closure last longer than is necessary because they hate you.
But
so
I mean,
much.
If the tunnel's not going to open, why?
Stop trying to make sense of the nonsense transportation policies in the city or in the state. If you try to make sense of it, your mind will literally explode. The blood that's coming right now from your right nostril is because you're thinking too hard about the illogic coming from these people. You can clean that mess up. It's getting all over the studio. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Initiative 27 goes before the state Supreme Court this morning at 9 a.m. Joshua Freed over at Safe King County, he's been working really, really hard to ensure that King County voters actually get to decide on whether or not they want heroin injection sites in their neighborhoods, a program that has negative outcomes as it relates to saving people's lives. That, according to a first-of-its-kind meta-analysis of the studies that are out there. Joshua Freed joins us this morning before heading to the Supreme Court. Joshua, good morning.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be on with you this morning.
So take us through how you find yourself moments away from being in front of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, actually sitting in my car ready to head down right now. But we started this fight over a year ago as we heard that King County was moving forward with the idea to open heroin injection sites, which are locations where heroin users go in and they can receive their needles, syringes, little pans to cook the heroin in, even the matches that the government provides for these heroin users. That's enabling heroin users to continue on. So we went forward, gathered 75,000 signatures on an initiative 27 to go to the ballot. We were successful. We only had to collect around 42,000, so we well covered the needed number. We got placed on the February 13th ballot through quite a battle, even with King County Council. So we felt a great victory there, but then the city of Seattle came forward and went to the courts to block our right and the voters' right, the 1.3 million voters in King County, from voting on this. So a very activist liberal judge appointed by Jay Inslee barred us from being on the ballot. So we appealed to the state Supreme Court, and through a lot of documentation, we are going to be making our case this morning at 9 a.m.
So what I love about this, the argument was basically coming from activists and Seattle progressives that essentially we're just too stupid to make a decision on something that's related to health, while at the same time they embrace the idea of legalized marijuana, which also comes with some health issues.
Yeah, they say that the decisions with health are best left to the King County Health Board or the City of Seattle and the City Council. Yet the chair of the King County Health Board is actually Rod Dombrowski, who's a attorney. So he's not a health official. And really, it's our government. It's we the people. And that's why this morning we feel that we'll be victorious before the state Supreme Court. Because what really happened when Judge Galvan went forward and says we can't vote on this as citizens, she took away our right to vote on initiatives having to do with health care, which that's quite a scary step when it comes to a government that's always been controlled by the people.
Well, and of course, you'll recall the Supreme Court looking at an anti-gun initiative that clearly didn't follow any of the rules that they were supposed to. They said, oh, no, we err on the side of the people getting to decide on these things. Do you think that ruling will maybe play a role in whatever the Supreme Court decides?
That's what we're really hoping this morning. I think our attorneys, Phil Talmadge and Mark Lamb, have made a great argument through our written arguments, and now this morning we'll make our oral arguments before the state Supreme Court. Certainly hoping that they're going to look at the state constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and say, we're going to lean on the behalf of the voters, letting them have the right, and then from there, people can bring suit and argue whether the decision that the population made was against the law or for the law. And ultimately, obviously, heroin use is illegal currently. So having heroin injection sites run by the government just flies in the face of all reason, especially when you look at the model that's happened up in Canada.
Yeah. And by the way, the federal government has said, we will come after you if you go ahead and open these heroin injection sites. So they are putting every city on notice not to go down this path.
That's right. And thankfully they have. We've been reaching out to the Justice Department for quite some time, making sure that the government is paying attention to what's going on here in Seattle. The city of Seattle has been pushing strongly to be the first location in America where a government-run heroin injection site would be open. And they've modeled it after the Canada model, which proves has a failed model. Their death rate in Canada has increased by 750% since they opened their first heroin injection site in 2003. So a lot more people are dying with those type of policies. Rather than get people into full-time treatment, which is what we desire, they're letting people continue to use heroin and giving them the needles and syringes and pans so they can continue on this path towards suicide.
Yeah, and look, we covered the meta-analysis study that was done just a few weeks ago, or at least the results were released a few weeks ago, and we talked to the experts. They're saying this does not work. If your end goal is to stop the sharing of needles, safe injection sites are not safe. In fact, they're just heroin injection sites that do not stop people from sharing needles. And by the way, it leads to just as many, if not more, heroin overdose deaths, just not on site. And if we're talking about things that are just happening in the moment, I don't think that that's a reasonable way to look at any of these issues. Just joining me this morning, by the way, we're talking with Joshua Freed from Safe King County, safekingcounty.org, by the way, if you want to learn more about their fight. Joshua has been leading the fight to allow King County voters to decide on whether or not we want heroin injection sites in our neighborhood. And you've seen some councils both in King County and outside of King County just saying, no, we don't want them here. But of course, Seattle wants it because of the Supreme Court's makeup, Joshua, because I know you feel like the legal argument you guys are making are sound legal arguments. You believe that you've got the law on your side. How much of a concern do you have that this is an idea that's popular with progressives, and you're pushing it against a very progressive Supreme Court?
I think you said it clearly. The state Supreme Court is more progressive, but hopefully they will learn or lean on the side of the Constitution and the right of the voters this morning. So I'll leave that decision to them. We'll make our best case this morning for the voters of King County, and this really is not a decision. They're not making a decision on whether heroin injection sites are legal or illegal. They're making a decision on whether we as voters in King County have the right to vote. So it's a pretty huge issue. It moved beyond just heroin injection sites when Judge Galvan made a ruling. It moved to really infringe on our rights as voters and citizens in King County.
Last question, just because I'm kind of curious. How does this all unfold? You get to the court a little bit before 9 a.m. They're scheduled to go. Are you nervous? Is it going to be a long process?
Actually, the hearing is at 9 o'clock, so we'll make our case at 9 o'clock. It only lasts around an hour, and then we have to wait several months, actually, for the decision. Of course, I think this is a clear decision, something they could make from the dais, but it does take time for them to write up their decision. So we expect 3 to 5 months until we know ultimately. So our ultimate goal is to make sure that Initiative 27 gets back on the ballot. We don't see it getting back on this November ballot, but maybe as soon as February of 2019. If not, then it would be November. But like you said, the U.S. government's weighed in on this. And if there's a pending issue like our case before the state Supreme Court, anybody trying to open a safe injection site or a heroin injection site, rather, would face opposition from our group to ban them from doing so.
Yeah. Well, we wish
this is really a position of compassion toward the user. We've had a very bipartisan approach to this. A lot of people that served with Safe King County collected the signatures. Mm-hmm. We had well over 1,000 volunteers out on the street collecting signatures. These are people who've lost family members to heroin, and they know that a heroin injection site only enables users to continue to use rather than get them into treatment.
Yeah.
And yet you have these most extreme people that are saying, let's legalize it, because they don't want government to tell them that they shouldn't be taking these poisonous drugs. They think they can make these decisions. Yet when you're a heroin user, your mind's like a Jekyll and Hyde mm-hmm. mind. You can't really make good decisions for yourself. And these folks aren't working. They're finding that it costs $35,000 a year to use this heroin. And that means they're going to find it within your car or your backyard. They're not working, not productive members of society. And that's our goal, to get them back into jobs, get them back with their families, and really get them to a position of support.
Joshua,
and enabling them through heroin injection sites, not the right thing to do.
You sound like a monster, the monster that the left will pretend you are. How dare you talk about compassion towards these people? Oh, my gosh. Well, we wish you the absolute best of luck. Again, anyone who wants to follow up on this and learn a little bit more, go to safekingcounty.org. I've been talking with Joshua Freed. You've been doing some tremendous work. Joshua, best of luck this morning. We're all rooting for you, and we can't wait to get the opportunity to actually vote on this and send a very clear message that, no, we don't want these in our neighborhoods, not because we lack compassion, but because we have compassion. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for speaking the truth.
Thank you. If you want to join the conversation, text me at 1-800-465-8770. It's an Unbetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Now, welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you my latest blog. You will not believe how out of touch Seattle Mayor Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin is. She's so out of touch. Don't give me that look. It's not that they look the same. It's that they're both equally out of touch.
Yeah, he was in touch.
Yeah, it's like they're all out of touch. And Jenny Durkin, when it comes to transportation, is no different. And if you care about transportation issues, not just in Seattle, but all across the state of Washington, please, 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 I need your help in texting the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you a link to my blog. I need you to read it. I need you to post it absolutely everywhere. Because the bad ideas that happen in Seattle end up happening in Bellevue and Tacoma and Olympia and Everett and Spanaway and Puyallup. You think that the nonsense, the craziness of Seattle stays in Seattle. It never does. And I remind you of that almost every single day. And so it's on us to call out this nonsense and put the pressure on. So even if it happens in Seattle, the folks who are in charge in, I don't know, Everett or Shoreline or Linwood or Bremerton, they know that they're going to face an avalanche of criticism from you and me if they decide to mimic the bad policy. So please text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I think this is a stupid story, but I'm going to do it anyway because I want to make a point about it. Every single day at about 4 a.m., we get a completely random and completely contrived survey from Wallet Hub. It's a blog. And every single day they do these surveys, the best or worst cities for X, Y, and Z, for parenting, for people who love to run, for pet owners, all these things. And today is one that's no less stupid, but it's a little bit more easy to get and figure out. Like, it's just the best city, the best fun city, the most fun cities in the United States. And Seattle comes in on the list at number 16, which is so dumb and makes no sense to me whatsoever, because the whole concept of a fun city doesn't really mean anything. It's not something you can legitimately look at. Now, they have a whole host of things that they look at to make these rules, to make these rulings. One of them, by the way, is fitness clubs, as if that has anything to do with whether or not you live in a fun city. But apparently, they think Seattle is a fun city because they like the obstacle course of downtown Seattle, trying to run around homeless people, needles, human feces on the sidewalks, trying to find parking in Ballard or Lake City. I love this. So 16th for Seattle. Now, I'm glad it's not in the top 10, because that just shows you how silly these stupid things are. But can we just briefly go through the top 10, Liz? One of them makes sense. Two of them make sense. Number one is Las Vegas. Number two is Orlando. Three, New York. Four, Atlanta. Five, Miami. Portland ends up on the list. I believe it's at either seven. So seven for Portland. Other than Vegas and New York, which I get because these are destinations for entertainment, one big city is not going to be dramatically different from another big city. If you live in a big city, you live arguably in a quote-unquote fun city. Because the way they define things here have to do with diversity of restaurants. And any major city you go to is going to have a diversity of restaurants, right? They're going to have different types of food. They're going to have different price ranges. We're fourth in coffee and tea shops per capita. That's Seattle. Now, I agree that our coffee here is particularly good because I'm kind of a coffee snob. I don't know much about the tea, but I'm a coffee snob. Simply having coffee and tea shops per capita does not mean that all of the coffee shops are good. So just simply judging by the amount of coffee shops seems foolish to me. That we're number six in beer gardens. I don't even know what that beer gardens, like
how large many, drinking
no,
areas.
No, I know, but how many beer is that? Why? How many beer gardens are there in Seattle?
I've been to quite a few.
Beer gardens that are not special events?
Yeah. Like,
where?
Queen Anne Beer Hall or...
Why does that not count as simply a bar?
I think it's just like outdoor seating with bench seats and open area.
So an outdoor bar.
Maybe some cornhole.
That's stupid. That's the worst dumb game and no one's ever good at it. And you always wonder why you play it, but you do.
Jenga is often seen.
Which is just stupid because when you get drunk, you use the Jenga pieces as weapons to beat up the person who just defeated you. But they also vote on bars. That's the only thing why it kind of throws me. This one, ninth in public beaches? Seattle? Public beaches, we come in at number nine.
There's, what, Golden Gardens and Alki?
That's the only two that came to mind for me.
Yeah.
I guess
they're good.
And they're not...
Alki's great.
But they're not beaches.
It's just hard to get to.
But they're just not beaches in a traditional sense.
Yeah, Alki is.
Barely.
It's white sandy beach.
Oh, yeah. How much sand is there?
Plenty.
It's literally, no, a sandbox full. There's, your studio is basically the size of Alki Beach. So when you say beaches, what do you think of? You think of like Los Angeles and stuff. And so this just seems silly to me. We're ranked number six in arcades and performing arts theaters. Okay, but are the theater that they're putting on any good? It's just we're just judging by the amount rather than whether or not they're good. But again, I take this position. Any major city in this country, you will have almost the exact same amount of access to everything they claim are fun. And to simply say one city is more fun than the other shows you that the person who put this list together has never even visited most of the cities that are on the top 20 list.
It's not fair that Orlando is number two.
Orlando, why? But that's the thing. Are you going, if you live in Orlando, are you going to Disney World all the time? No, it's for tourists. And so to take credit for that and the crappy Guy Fieri restaurants that I'm sure are running rampant in Orlando. God. Wallet Hub.
Flavortown.
Yeah. So disgusting. Everything about it. Just put Cheetos on and he thinks it's high class. You're listening. Text RANTZ, RANTZ, to 1-800-465-8770. So Jason Rancho.